Welcome to the Perfectly Sane Show, episode 619. I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
I'm going to be distracted during this episode. Got to hide my classified documents.
You mean you got to find your classified documents?
Oh, no, I know where they are. I just want to make sure nobody else can find them.
Tony is not working with the Department of Justice to return.
That's right. That's right.
I'm just going to say, I apologize, fans. I don't even know where I assume at this point we all have secret documents somewhere.
We must.
They are popping up everywhere. So to my FBI contact, I misplaced mine, I think. Maybe I have it, maybe it's somewhere I know, but I'm sorry in advance when you have to come search. So
There's a part of me that's like, all right, a bunch of you guys work with like senior executives. You hand these guys paperwork, they never put it where they're supposed to put it. And like you put them in a position where like all the secretaries go home and they're handling it themselves. It just like filed on a shelf somewhere and left there. Never thought about again. That's not what Donald Trump was doing. The worst part about this whole thing is that's not what Donald Trump was doing. He was taking them and like selling them to people.
Yeah.
But yes. Because like Pence and Biden were so shitty, he's going to get off now.
Like, I mean, that's what's crazy, right? Pence and Biden are you know, they alerted the Department of Records and Department of Justice and were like, hey, we found some shit that maybe we shouldn't have anymore. And Trump was actively obstructing it. Like, it's fucking nonsense, but whatever. Earl is here.
Yes, I am dressed to the nines, got my tuxedo on, and I got my fancy black tie on. You know, just the best things for tonight's giant gala event.
And Jeff is here, too. I don't think he put his tux on, though.
Hey, I'm Jeff Keighley, and it's all led up to this. The Jeff Awards.
Oh, wait, does that mean we're going to get a surprise visit from Hideo?
Want to announce Death Stranding 3. Yeah, so we're gonna do our top tens and name a, you know, kind of come up with a joint top 10. But as I said previously, Microsoft had their thing. What was it, the Developer Direct? And we'll talk about that for a few minutes. There's not much to talk about there, I don't think. It wasn't really a big event, but they did talk about some stuff. What did they kick off with? I am drawing a blank on Minecraft.
Yeah. It's the only thing I got to see, yes.
Okay, that's the only thing you saw. Okay, so what did you think of Minecraft Legends? Because it was not what I was expecting.
I thought they announced the game before, but I was like, I have never seen it a day in my life. And it was so weird that they spent, I mean, again, I was like, they spent so much time talking about the PvP. And I'm like, I didn't realize that was the thing people cared about in Minecraft, that you're going to spend 5 minutes talking about how you can fight other people in this game. So.
Yeah, it was like a versus multiplayer reveal, and it was really weird that I'm still not even sure what that game is either. You play with a team, but you, like, somebody could be building forts, somebody could be collecting stuff. I don't really know how it works. Some sort of strategy thing where you are work, there's like mobs of enemies, there's two teams. I thought they did a very poor job of kind of explaining what it was.
Yeah, that was the other thing. Because it's like, I don't know. It's like, I know it's 4v4. I mean, it's 4-player co-op, I think. And then it's 4v4 multiplayer. And they're like, yeah, because at one point she's like, oh, I like to get like this horse or unicorn. And I'm like, okay, but what does it have to do with the game? Right. Like, I know it's a mode of transportation, but like, what is, like, they think the objective is to, like, it's essentially kind of like capture their bases. But I don't know how that works outside of PvP.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm more interested in, right? Is like, how do I play this as, you know, from a single player standpoint or with friends as opposed to against other people, which I don't care about. Jeff, Tony, did you see Minecraft Legends?
A little bit. It looked like mobs following people around. So many mobs. All the mobs.
Yeah.
I did not.
You didn't catch
it. I didn't see any of this. I didn't know we were.
Oh, it's yeah. So I mean, it was, you know, they had their thing at 3 o'clock yesterday when everybody was working. But yeah, so they
a very odd time, which is why I ended up not watching it, because like I watched the first, and then I had something come up at work, and I'm like, by the time I got back, it was over. I'm like, as far as I could tell, it was five games. I think we knew about four of them already.
Yeah, the Minecraft ESO. So they announced a new expansion for that. That's coming in June when ESO expansions always come out. Minecraft is April, yes. I think. Forza, they didn't give a date for. They showed it. It looks like Forza Motorsport. So, nothing really surprising there, other than that they still don't have a date on it, and that game was supposed to be out last year. And they showed Redfall. They gave kind of an extended demo of Redfall. That looks like a Borderlands Destiny type 4-player co-op shooter. Fine, I guess.
Yeah, I've heard mixed things about it. Some people said they have it, some people are like, but it's whatever. Again, the benefit for Microsoft really is that they have Game Pass. It's worth checking it out. So
then I guess the big surprise, because it was the only one we didn't know about, was Hi-Fi Rush, which is the new Tango Workshop's game. Tango, the team behind Evil Within and Ghostwire Tokyo, and head up by Shinji Mikami, I think, who was the Resident Evil guy.
Yes, and he's also, is it Chainsaw Lollipop?
I thought that was Suda 51.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Shinji Mikami. I think he also had something to do with Devil May Cry when that first came out. So, you know, he story director, Resident Evil, Dino Crisis, involved in all that. Yeah, he was part of Devil May Cry. Did the Evil Within games, which are very Resident Evil like, and now Hi-Fi Rush, which I'm not sure what it's like, but Earl played a little bit of. We'll probably talk more about that next week,
just to, you know, give it time to breathe and stuff like that. But I will say it dropped last night. I was able to install it this morning, and I put something like 3.5 hours into the game already today. So I've really been enjoying my time with it.
And it seemed like outside of you, like the general public seems to really be into it too. Like very positive reviews on Steam, which that's where, you know, people are paying for it on Steam. So it's not like, oh, I played it on Game Pass and I like it because free stuff is cool. People that are actually paying for it are going, yeah, this is a good game. So I'm interested to try it. We'll get to it this weekend. Earl will play more of it. I'm not sure if it's a Tony game or not, but we will
never
see.
Know.
We'll talk some of that next week with other stuff like Monster Hunter and Dead Space. And we have games to talk about next week. But let's end the game of the year for 2022. Let's put 2022 behind us, guys. Let's end it.
Kill it dead.
Yes.
Finish the fight. Bum bum ba-dum, bum.
Kill the past and move on.
Oh God.
We didn't say that. Oh, you didn't say that, Disney. We said we don't need any lawsuits. We said nothing. We didn't reference any franchises.
There's no reference to that at all. No. All right, so let's name our top 10 here, guys. Tony, you want to kick us off with your number 10?
So I've actually been struggling with number 10 because I have two games fighting over it. One of which I was playing tonight to see if it could like get me over the top. And unfortunately, that game, I loaded up a section and then all the sound disappeared. So based on that, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. At that moment, you lost out.
Technical issues.
That's right. It saddened me. So, but in that spot, I'm going to put MLB The Show 22. I like that it's on Game Pass now, and I can play on my preferred console for free. It's awesome. How many years has it been now? Has it been 2 or 3 years that they've been doing this?
I think this is the second year.
I think from a technical perspective, because I haven't played the Sony versions, which I'm assuming are technically flawless. It was an improvement over last year. There were far fewer issues. It was super enjoyable. The Be a Pro mode is great, especially now that you can be a pitcher and a hitter at the same time. A pitcher and like a position player at the same time. You know, kind of like, what's his name? I can't remember his name. It's gone from my brain.
Ohtani.
Yeah. So I kind of like that stuff. I don't really get into like the more like running your baseball franchise and all that stuff. And I tend to alternate, like I'll be a pitcher 1 year and I'll be a hitter the next year. So I was a position player this year. Really, really enjoyed it. A whole lot of fun. You know, good game.
Good. I did not play 22, but those games are always great. Jeff, what do you got at number 10?
I have Pokemon Arceus Legends. Because I needed a game at number 10.
Oh, no.
Wow.
No,
I liked it. That game was...
it's good.
You know, for as boring as I find Pokemon for the most part, it was nice to see them do something with it, finally, that was kind of different and pretty fun. It was a nice way to start last year. So
yeah, I mean, I thought it kept the Pokemon feel, right? Like, you're still collecting Pokemon and...
Yeah.
You're still fighting Pokemon, but they did it in a different way. And I thought the leveling system for it was neat, where you're going out and, you know, finding things out about the Pokemon to level up your book, which is leveling you up. So I thought that was neat.
It was fun running around in like a 3D open world type thing.
Yeah. Did you end up
more of that?
Did you end up finishing it, or did anybody end up finishing it?
Oh yeah.
I did not, but I liked what I played of it. Earl, what do you got at number 10?
Well, so this is kind of a cheat. Not necessarily a cheat, but because we had 2 weeks in between filming our categories and this actual awards show, I had some time to play a game that was on my did not get to play in 2022 list. And it just snuck in at number 10 because I'm having fun with it. I have not put, you know, I've not beaten it enough, but, and it is kind of chunky, I can see that, but I am having fun with it. And that would be Gotham Knights.
Nice.
Yeah, I do think, and I, you know, I don't think we, I think we talked about this with Tony a bit, but I Midnight Suns, I do like that they, again, this game is carried kind of by the writing, and I don't necessarily mean it's great, but like the dynamics between all the Batman sidekicks, you get Nightwing, you get Jason Todd as Red Hood, you get Batgirl, and you get Tim Drake's Robin, and like those kind of form like this really fun family dynamic, especially with this like hole left in the gap by Batman. So a lot of that is them like just communicating and kind of, you know, they are kind of dicks to each other at times. They're also very kind of, they are a makeshift family who kind of lost their paternal figure. So, and the combat isn't bad. It is not nearly as silky smooth as Arkham, and nor is the stealth really. But for the most part, I am enjoying it. It works as it functions. There's a lot, you know, there's a lot of combos and stuff that you get to unlock as you go through. It did, sadly enough, just bump off my former number 10 game when I originally did this, which I would just give a shout out to Paparazzi, which I did enjoy as well. And I do think that's just a super adorable game. Though I think it's off Game Pass now, so, you know, you have to buy it.
Yeah, it did just leave. Question about Gotham Knights, because there's the four bat kids, as you said. Do you get to choose which one you play as when you start, or is it do you alternate between them, or
you get to pick, and you can't switch them out at any time. But I mean, you can switch them out in like the hub, but you can't like switch them out mid mission.
Okay.
So like that's what I've done. Like the first mission I played as Red Hood, then I played as Robin, then I played as Batgirl, then I played as Nightwing, just to kind of get a feel for all the characters. Granted, they all kind of control similarly, but like your traversal is slightly different. Like Red Hood uses guns, which none of the other Bat Kids do, which I still think is weird. Like Dick has his sticks. Robin, I think, has his bow. And so it is nice that you can kind of mix it up. Granted, again, they don't really seem that radically different so far, but it is still fun to play with.
And am I correct in understanding that it is only two-player co-op?
Kind of. The story is only two-player co-op. I believe there is, I don't know if it's out yet, there's a four-player co-op, like tower mode.
Yeah, that's out now, yes.
Yes. So, but the story mode itself is two-players.
And weird.
I will also say this much, and this is just me, because I don't think I've ever got to complain about this too much. I understand the notion behind it, but I really hate the fact that games gatekeep multiplayer for like the first like hour or so, like where it's like you have to go through like these missions before you can unlock online multiplayer. Destiny does that. I don't think Destiny's as long, but Destiny 2 did that, where like, you have to go through like this mission before you are able to have your friends join. And a lot of games do that, where it's like, okay, you have to go through like the first mission or two by yourself before you can actually start playing with friends. And I'm like, I get that you're trying to do a tutorial for me, but I just kind of want to jump in and play with friends.
Yeah.
Granted, I'm not that here where I am playing on my own right now, but it's still kind of dumb.
Yeah, agreed. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying Gotham Knights. I look forward to eventually getting to it myself. My number 10 is Lego Star Wars Skywalker Saga. Jeff would be like, it's just another Lego game, and I guess. but it's very good Lego game. It has, multiple planets that you go to. There's open world objectives in all of them, so it's more like one of the modern Marvel Lego games or the DC games that they've done recently, as opposed to like, you know, the older ones where it was just you go through levels. Very well done. There's leveling systems now, which is weird. You actually can level up your classes. You don't level up characters individually, but each character has a different class, and you can level up those classes with your bricks that you collect. And they've added some smart things in there, and I think it plays really well. And it's a fun game to kind of go through. Yes, it's still Lego, right? Like it's simplified character action, but maybe the best one that they've done in a long, long time. Tony, what do you got at 9?
Number 9. Something near and dear to Earl's heart. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: Shredder's Revenge. I don't normally play beat 'em ups. I don't normally play this kind of game, but this one really spoke to like 10-year-old Tony renting the arcade game from the video place. It really like brought me back to my youth and really like gave me a really decent game. Like I was not like, you kind of play those games and I always expect them to be kind of crappy, and they normally are, and this, like, the levels were fun, the boss fights for the most part were interesting, And it was fun to play with people. Like, you could get, like, a bunch of people and have madness going on in the screen. The combo powers were a lot of fun. Just a great, great game. So, I am happy to have played this one. Thank you, Earl. I thank you personally.
Yes, yeah. And we will be hearing about that game again, I'm sure.
probably a couple times. Yeah, I mean, I know we're going to touch on it again, but I think it is the only game that everybody in our group chat was actually able to get in and play because it had 6-player co-op. It was insane. And
I think Jeff played with us. So.
Yeah, oh, Jeff, yeah, you guys got me the achievement.
We helped him beat the game. Oh, yeah.
We beat the game for him. I mean, yeah. We helped him beat the game.
Yeah, so good multiplayer memory there. Jeff, what do you got in 9?
Hari 50, the Anniversary Collection. Talked about this earlier, previous episode, but I'm so impressed by this thing. Especially considering, like, the Atari games, I don't think hold up, most of them. But you have...
That's fair.
You have tons of Atari games, like... Not everything that you'd want, but, you know, everything they could get, I guess. And going through, like, every generation they did, all the way through the Jaguar. But better than that, you have new versions of some of the classic games. And even better than that is everything, like, the package around it. Like, the museum stuff, the old ads, the old design documents, the documentary videos surrounding it. I think, Chris, you said that it kind of, like, raised the bar for what a retro collection should be.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I would love, love, love to see more stuff like this. But as it is, it stands alone as pretty special. Like, it's kind of unparalleled for this type of release to have that much stuff, to feel that, like, that much care put into it.
What's crazy about it, too, is Digital Eclipse, I think, is the developer of it. They do all that legwork for all their other collections. It's just whether yeah, they greenlight it or not. Like, do you want us to do this? And, like, Atari was like, yes, go. That's to town.
You know, that makes me kind of sad that you had other companies pass on something. Like, oh, just throw a bunch of shit on there. And
so I listened to an interview by one of the studio heads. I think he did it with Jeff Gerstmann on Gerstmann's new podcast. And he was saying that, like, they would pitch this and these other studios just didn't know what they were trying to do. They were like, sure, you can have access to all these archives and you can talk to us, but they didn't know what they were trying to do. And I think maybe Atari 50 gives them that, like, here's what we were trying to do.
Show this, just bring this to your pitch meeting.
This is what we're doing for your franchise or your system. Like, so I do hope that, yeah, it sets it off.
Oh man, that'd be so great.
Earl, what do you got at 9?
This will be a theme, at least from the back half. Power Wash Simulator. Again, I think it was one of those games that, well, one, I don't think any of us knew about it going into the year. But it was just the right game at the right time during the summer. It's a very archy, relaxing game.
100%.
It's just very chill. Again, you're doing busy work, but it's very chill. And I just like the scope of it and the variety of missions and vehicles and terrains that you get to clean. And there's just something about that game that is just different, I guess. So, yeah.
It is also my number 9. Yeah, fully agree on that. Like, when Walt was like, hey, let's play this for a game night, it's like, I don't really want to play that. Like, we're going to play it once, we're going to unlock an achievement, and then it's just going to be stuck on my... Like, yeah, it's just going to be stuck there. One achievement unlocked. I'm never going to play it. And we played it. I was like, this is fun. Like, it's stupid. It's really, really dumb.
It's so dumb. It's the worst when you're just trying to find that little percentage of, like, the map that isn't green.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but I got to find it. I got to make sure it's working. Got to make sure everything shines.
And it was another like fun gaming moment that we all kind of had together was when we were cleaning like that fountain or something. It was like Jeff was the only one not participating. The rest of us were all in there, and like we're climbing up this fountain stupidly jumping off of it and trying to find the spots. And it was like so stupid, but just had a ton of fun playing it. And then I ended up playing it for like another 35 hours after that. So, yeah, Power Wash Simulator out of nowhere, but good time. Tony, what do you got at number eight?
I've got this amazing game that we've never heard of or talked about called Power Wash Simulator.
Weird game.
I mean, I think the one thing that we haven't mentioned so far is I like the way this game, more than any other, probably any other game I've even played this year, distills like what a video game is down to like its most basic elements. Like, you're not doing much, but you're doing a thing. That thing is entertaining in and of itself, and by doing that thing, it rewards you with things that let you do that thing better. And it just kind of like keeps going and going and gives you new scenarios to do the thing. And I just like how it takes a really simple concept and just keeps at it. It doesn't like bother you with all this these unnecessarily frills or like, let's add an RPG element to, like, it doesn't do that. Like, it just, let's make a game about washing shit off of other shit. And we're going to stick with that. And now you can wash it off better and with a different nozzle. And like, I like that. I like how it does that.
Yeah. You guys have really sold me on this one.
It's,
it's soothing. It's also like so soothing. Like,
yeah, it's like super chill.
Yeah,
it is like you wouldn't think because it's work. It is.
You know, I like when it was called Super Mario Sunshine.
No, that was when it was bad.
that was when it was bad, Jeff. I'm sorry.
It wasn't also, so chill.
that was not a chill game at all. Well, one other thing before we move off Power Rush Simulator, like there is a surprisingly goofy ass story hidden in there's actually a narrative to why you're doing all this, and you don't have to pay any attention to it. Like, you'll get these alerts as you're cleaning that are like, hey, you got a text from this person, and if you read it, like, it'll be some nonsense or whatever, but if you start to piece it all together, and it's like the mayor is like embezzling funds and ultimately you save the world. Like, the final level is you, like, cleaning off this monument or something, which allows a laser to be shot into a volcano to prevent it from destroying the world. Like, God. So stupid. But there's this goofy, like, as you said, Tony, it's just, like, video game the game. Like, it's, yeah. Like, they just distill everything down, like, into this stupid package that somehow works. Jeff, what do you got at number eight?
Infernax. Yeah, that kind of a Games Pass surprise for me. It's basically a tribute to Simon's Quest, but
better.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's better. Bottom line, better. You know, a lot more accessible than Simon's Quest ever was. You know, and it adds a lot of like cool things to that formula, like a little, like, you get to make choices here and there, fast travel, map, things that would have really helped trying to play Simon's Quest. Yeah, it was just like a really cool surprise, really great game that I'm sure I'll play again someday. So,
did you finished it, Jeff?
I have finished every game on my list, sir.
Okay, I was just wondering because like there if. There's a way in that game where you unlock like a Contra dude, basically, and you could go.
I did that. Did you do that?
Yeah, and you could go through the game basically like with this dude that he's like has the Rambo bandana and the gun that shoots like three different bullets out.
You get that just from beating the game, and like
there's different endings, and I'm not entirely sure how I ended up with it, but yeah, I ended up unlocking this goofy Contra dude that I can now run through the game with. So yeah, I think there's reasons to go back and play that.
It'll happen. That game is really solid. So yeah, I will play it again one day.
Earl, what do you have at number eight?
This is a video game by the strictest definitions of it. I don't know if anybody else has it on their list. Probably not. But Marvel Snap.
Okay.
Because I put way too much time into that game. I mean, I played it during this podcast. And I think when I discussed it when it first came out, it's a very simple card game. But I think it's that simplicity that just makes the loop so addictive. The fact that there's a lot of randomness. Like, you don't know what locations you're going to get. You don't know what your opponent's going to play. But the fact that it kind of has like that chess, you know, like I have a destruction deck, which is like cards that get destroyed, either give power or to get a boost in, and then somebody could play armor, which will prevent that from happening and stuff like that. Or like some people who play Magneto, which will move around some of the characters, or Juggernaut, who, and it's all of this thing where it's like you're kind of trying to think of what the next person's going to do. And just the way they, again, kind of got the nice, just the way. This could tell to people who created this game are very passionate about Marvel and come up with these very unique powers for all of these cards and all of the ways they kind of work together or work opposite of each other. The one downside I will say is that they need to kind of get over rocks. I don't know who told them rocks are fun, but like, these rock locations are a pain in the ass. There's one now where it's essentially you have to go for a turn to get rid of four rocks, or you just use that and like, it never makes any sense. Everybody says it's going to go up that spot. It just seems like a waste of a thing. Other than that, ton of fun. It continues to be charming. They continue to add enough, you know, like they add new locations, add new cards. They'll do like special events. So it's always something to kind of go back in. It's really nice to play for like 10 minutes. You know, I play on my way into work. I usually play before bed. Again, during the podcast sometimes. So yeah, so Marvel Snap is a ton of fun.
And free to play too, right? Like,
yes, yep. For most people, except for that one dude who spent thousands of dollars to collect every card in the game. So
I mean, but you, like, you can play it. You'll unlock. Yeah. You'll unlock currency to buy new cards or whatever.
Yes,
I mean, you can buy shit if you want, but neat. I have not played it. That sounds great.
Am I the one who has played it?
Yeah, I don't really play. It's mobile or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me. I really. Very, very rarely, so.
Okay.
I mean, I could play this, but I haven't yet.
My number 8 is Pac-Man World Repack. Remake of Pac-Man World from the...
Because it's not Chris's list if it doesn't include a Pac-Man
game. Exactly. It's like, I am... I like Pac-Man.
Like, we would get sued for copyright infringement. They would assume the show was someone else's that we were rerunning and just...
Yes, if there are there are Pac-Man games, they have to be on my list. So I think it's a really good, you know, update of a early 3D platformer. I think if it were like, this is a brand new game, I'd be like, this is maybe a little too rudimentary, but...
I thought you were going to go the other direction. I was like, I don't know, man. I don't think this would pass as a new game.
No. I think if this was like, if you were trying to pass this off as a brand new game, be like, I don't know. It's a little too simple.
I'd like something like that, like a new Pac-Man, but
yeah.
But yeah, you could feel the age, but they did pretty it up and stuff.
And they did upgrade. Like, I went back and played the original on the PlayStation. And I mean, aside from the visuals, like they made things more, you know, visible to see. Like, there were things you would miss in the original because they just didn't have, you know, any tell that they were there. The controls are much better than they were. I think you actually have like a couple extra moves that you didn't have in the original that make the game a little bit easier. It could still be a pain. Like, there's still levels that are cheap and annoying, like those games would be back when they came out, but
yeah.
I think they mostly did a really good job of updating it. Tony, what do you got at number 7?
Number 7. Clearly it's the most exciting game on my list. I was really waiting to talk. God of War Ragnarok. I feel like I gave this game a little short shrift. I'm sure it's probably better than 7, but it feels so much like its predecessor, which was a fantastic game. But now I'm like, You gave me more of that, and that's great. And I wanted more of that. But I also wanted it to be better, and it's not better. Which is fine, because that previous game was fantastic. But it's, you know, it's been a few years now, and I expect a little bit more. But it's still, like, really fun. Some of the new characters are great, including the squirrel guy, who is hilarious. So listen to the squirrel, and keep talking to him, because he gets annoyed and then yells at you. Do that.
I have not gotten into the squirrel guy yet.
Ratatasker.
I came up, but it's for me, it was very much the same. It was like, this is more God of War, which was good. Yeah. I like playing it, but I didn't love. Yeah. I was like, I think I was the one that had the weakest.
Yeah. On it. Yeah.
It's like, and I just fell off of it.
And of course, boy is still boy.
Yeah, he's still there.
I thought Chris, you were liking the sequel better.
I did. Like, so that opening, I think the first like 2 hours are pretty great.
Yes.
But they are linear. Like, they are, here is your path, and we're going to put you into these cool set pieces, and we're going to have you fight bosses. And then once it opens up, it becomes God of War again. Like, you're on a boat, and there's a lot of talking, and it's a...
Yeah.
It's less what I want out of God of War, and
The opening had a ton of promise. I'm like, yeah. One of my favorite gaming moments of the year is when Thor kills you and then literally shocks you back to life. Like,
yes.
I have never had anything like that happen to me in a game ever. I'm like, this is great. He literally like knocks you into another dimension. You're like, okay, fine, let's go. And the rest of the game is back to God of War, which kind of felt a little disappointing.
Beat it, Tony?
I have not beat it yet. I got as far as like, okay, this is what I think, and then I moved on to another game.
You guys are crazy. Send me your fucking PS5s with your fucking God of War. I'll play that shit. I love the fucking first one.
No, I love that game too. I'm going to play more of it. I'm not done. Going back.
And I will go back to it as well. But I mean, it came out November, right? So
yeah,
like right in the midst of like everything else releasing, and I have like 17 games that I'm trying to play,
right? You're like, I can put 5 hours here and 5 hours there and 5 hours there, and you get to a point where some of these games are great and would be worthy of more time, but I just don't have it at the moment,
right? But yes, Jeff, we will get back to it and play more of the good God of War.
And then
we will talk about it, and you can feel bad about it.
Send me your PlayStation.
I'm not going to do that because it was $400. But
I'll send you a picture, Jeff, if you want.
tell me what you got at number 7, though.
Me?
Yes.
This is a game. I doubt we'll hear more about this one tonight, but it's called Vampire Survivors.
Yeah, we definitely won't hear about that.
Pretty fun, chill arcade style game. And I'll keep it short because I know it's going to come up again. But again, the thing for me about it that's really cool is the auto attack. Like it frees you up because it's not about button mashing or kind of twitch gameplay. It frees you up to strategize and make choices with the, you know, like the stuff that you draw. Like, all right, what am I gonna do here? What am I gonna pull out of this? How should I attack this group of enemies? And and it's just like a really fun. I usually only will play it like, you know, one session at a time, so like half hour or less, you know.
Yeah. It's a good way to approach
it. It's still, this is the one game I'm not like 100% of this, but like here and there I'll still go, let's go back. And I think the other night I started the character that throws the Bible. I'm like, let's see how it is to start with the guy with the Bible. So, but yeah, again, I'll shut up about it. We'll talk about it more.
Yes, it's coming up again, I'm sure. Earl, what do you got at number 7?
Xenoblade Chronicles 3. Only reason it's not the 7, and I've gone through this with Xenoblade Chronicles 2, Xenoblade X, and Xenoblade Chronicles the Golden, is that I've not finished the game because $100 games is very intimidating. So I'll play it out of it.
Hard to play, man.
I'll get out of it. I'll take a long sabbatical and I'll come back sometime this year, probably over the summer, and finish it up. But, you know, this, I think, improves on 2's combat. It kind of, like, 2, I mean, I have all the games in the franchise. I think 2's overly complicated. I think this one kind of simplifies it more by just having, like, a bigger party and then having you be able to, like, switch roles with them. And I think that's a fun mechanic, even if it gets weird at some point. I do like that. I like the setup that you can kind of merge these characters during combat to become giant mechs. You will always win me over with giant mechs. You know, the story kind of starts off simple like it always does and then expands outwards. And I mean, spoilers, I guess I do know that it eventually does tie back into the first 2 games in the franchise. So I do like that they are making it a proper capper. Again, like, it's really just because I find the battle system in these games just such a delight for RPGs, I guess. And it's, you know, it's been, I guess, 13 years since the first one. There's not really any other combat system on the market like it. So every time it comes out, one, it's refreshing because there's only been 4 games in the franchise, but it is just something I adore and constantly go back to. Again, it would probably be high if I actually, you know, could have put the 100 hours they demand of me in it in 2022.
Those types of games are just so daunting. Like, I like what I played of Xenoblade, but it's like, do I want to start a 100-hour game? It's the same with Persona, right?
Like, I was going
to
say it's the same for Persona. And Persona's all in on Game Pass. I'm like, yeah, but you take forever, don't you? And I get it on the Switch, but then I'm like, it's free on the Xbox.
Yep. My number 7 is same as Jeff's, Vampire Survivors. It took me a little while to warm up to it. At first, I was like, I don't know if I like this because of the fact that you don't attack, and it does. It takes a while for it to build up for you to, like, I think for it to actually click, and like, you have to, like, level up yourself a little bit, and you have to kind of start figuring out the evolutions. But I think once it does click, man, like, I fell in love with it. And I've 100%ed the main game. I'm now playing the DLC. Like, it is just a fantastic kind of arcade goofiness.
I guess the one thing neither of us mentioned is the just the amount of chaos that's happening by the end of your run. You know, if you make it to 30 minutes, it's just, it gets crazy. Just fun. That's always fun.
Does I know you played it on Xbox. Does it slow down the Xbox when it gets does the frame drop a little bit?
Maybe sometimes.
I haven't noticed a whole lot of it.
Sometimes.
It's just a hair.
Yeah. It's not much, but it's like, wow, it's pushing the hardware. which is just insane. The amount of stuff they put on screen, and you're just seeing explosions everywhere. Ton of fun. I don't know if we'll hear from Earl or Tony. I'm hoping so, but if not, you'll, Vampire Survivors is great.
You'll hear from it again. Yes, that much I can.
We will.
We will.
Will we really?
what is your number 6, Tony?
Vampire Survivors. Oh, Jesus Christ. I don't have much to say. I look at games like this, like, and they kind of, like, strike my brain as, like, the twin stick shooters, which is a genre I hate. And the fact that, as Jeff mentioned, you don't have to actually push a button to attack anything is awesome. Like, I just love it. I love walking around and guiding people in this stuff. It's just great.
You can play it one-handed while you're drinking a bourbon. It's
fun. You literally can. You literally can. It's and that and the fact that, you know, when you start a game, it's going to be over in 30 minutes, no matter what happens.
Yeah.
I just like the fact that it's bite sized in that portion. And plus, you know, there are 11 billion achievements, so you can start each run with a very particular goal.
Yes.
And that's kind of cool too.
That's exactly how I approached it.
I go with no goals. I don't think I've ever even looked at the achievement list. Oh, I go with no goals at all and get fucking 7 achievements every run. For a while there, when you start off, that's kind of what happens, you know?
There's 140 base achievements.
Yeah, there's so many achievements.
And, like, every, like, you know, finish 15 minutes of a level, finish the whole level, get this character to, you know, finish a level with this character or whatever. Like, there's so many different things. So, and that's exactly how I played it, Tony. Was like, all right, well, there's an achievement for, you know, getting to level 80 with this character. I guess I'm going to play as this character and do a run with them. And then it's like, there popped an achievement. Like, just so cool. Jeff, what do you got at number 6?
I have Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, the best looking game of 2022.
Why didn't you nominate it?
It just slipped my mind. I don't know why, because I don't know if you guys remember when I was playing it, like when I was trying to tell you guys to get it, like,
yeah,
I was telling you guys that I was like, this game, like the campaign especially, it was like, this blowing me away, man. Like, I can't believe how fucking good it looks. So there's that. It's your, you know, you got your great Call of Duty action. I really, really enjoyed the campaign. I thought every mission was doing something different and fun and crazy. Like, there's a mission where you're like hanging from a helicopter with like a fucking rope tied around your ankle because you fell out of the helicopter. You're fucking flying along a highway shooting people as they're driving, and you're upside down trying to shoot them. All sorts of crazy shit like that, like, you know, which you expect from Call of Duty, but I just think they did a good job of coming up with different scenarios for every level. So, and the campaign was longer than usual. The multiplayer I was really into for like a month at least, and then I convinced all my local friends to get the game, and I played with them. I played with them for a week because I was like, I was prestiged. I'm like, I'm kind of, like, I've done this a billion times. I was at the point with this multiplayer that I played it so much, I was just trying to level up all the different weapons and shit and trying out weird, like, I made like a shield class where I just run around with a shield and a pistol. I mean, that's kind of how into the multiplayer I was for a while. And I think the multiplayer levels in it are fucking fantastic. Shout out to Border Crossing. That's kind of my favorite in it. And shout out to my DeKalb homies who are still playing it.
Are being abandoned.
They're having fun. I'll be back eventually. If they fucking download fucking Monster Hunter or something, maybe, you know. Yeah, they could do a little give or take.
Jeff just went out for some milk. He'll be back soon. Don't worry.
Earl, what do you got at number 6?
Rainbow Six Extraction. I think I've talked about this before. I don't know. I guess I found it delightful. I guess it's very stressful. It was very weird. I mean, like, on paper, I think even when it was announced, I made fun of it because it's a Rainbow Six game with not necessarily zombies, but it is kind of like the zombies from The Last of Us in a way. Like, a lot of them are sound based. And, like, once you hurt them, it's hard to shake them. But there's just something about the fact that you went through this game hunting these things down and had a bunch of different objectives in a variety of cities. Granted, the cities didn't matter because mostly you were, like, in tiny corridors. But it was fun. And then you had a host of different characters with their own unique abilities and stuff like that. And there was just something about, like, leveling them up. And, like, being able to have, like, this one character who has, like, a sledgehammer and, like, finding an enemy and just, like, being able to, like, sledgehammer through that wall and to take them out. It was just so satisfying. And it remained some very stressful scenarios, but a ton of fun. And honestly, I don't know what I expected from the game, but I didn't expect to have as much fun as I did with it this year.
Good to hear. And sounds like it's a 3-player game.
Yes, which is always a weird number.
Yeah, it's tough because, like, I normally have like I have like a group of 4, or like, you know, we have you know 5-6 people with us, so it's hard to play a 3-player game. But
yeah, because I mean we had 3 people for this, but like usually our group is like it can vary, and it was like it's the same thing with Destiny. I don't know why you saw Epic 3. It's like a, I mean, I was gonna say such an odd number. It really is an odd number.
So. Yes, it is. My number six is Proteus, which talked about a few times here. It is a retro themed kind of like Doom like. Super fast playing. It has like that Doom look to it, but it plays more like a modern shooter. It's really, really cool. You know, it has this like cool grid based map that you kind of like work yourself through. Tons of levels, and then there's this whole you know community of people making maps for it and stuff. That it's just really, really cool game to play if you are into like Doom type shooters. So, and I had a ton of fun with it. Tony, what do you got at number five?
Oh, I almost kicked my water over because I was so excited.
You just can't hide it.
I guess this game, I've had its predecessors much higher on the list. Total War Warhammer 3, which I think might eventually be the best of the Total War Warhammer games, because they have this thing where they like, as they add additional races and additional content, like the game itself gets bigger. But this game kind of launched in a state missing the mode that everyone was hoping for, the Immortal Empires mode. But of course, that came out in August in like beta form, which was still fun, but clearly is missing some stuff. So this is a game I probably put about 70 hours into. So I've definitely had a good experience with it, but it's also clearly not quite finished. But it gave me my Total War fix. It's awesome, you know, huge armies of monstrosities fighting against each other. And now they've added, with the Immortal Empires, like demons from hell. So there's, you know, armies of chaos spawn and, you know, all the cool demon type things that you would expect. And it's fun. Like I had gotten, you kind of get in a rut with Total War because one army of spearmen and archers and horsemen kind of feels like another army of spearmen and archers and horsemen after a while. But like having all of these races and all mixed together kind of, it makes it an experience, and each one plays uniquely and interestingly. And I was really happy to play this game. I really want them to finish it though, and they're still adding more content, so they're not done with it, and that makes me happy. But very, very good game, but not quite finished.
Great. Jeff, what do you got at number five?
Number five, I'm going to have to give props. Look, it's not a 10 out of 10, but it is a really, I think, surprisingly good game. Sonic Frontiers, they took a big swing with it, putting Sonic in 3D open world game, and it works, and it's fun. And, you know, I've seen people compare it to Tony Hawk, and I totally kind of get that comparison, because, like, it just feels like a big Sonic playground for you to go around, like go do tricks around almost. There's just like rails and stuff everywhere for you to do. No matter where you go, you're gonna find a little mini objective. It just surprisingly works. Like, kind of just the fact that it works and it's pretty fun. It's not broken. It's pretty amazing. And I think some pretty cool bosses and kind of, you know, take some inspiration from Breath of the Wild and such. Yeah, I don't know. Not perfect, but I fucking loved it a lot. So,
I am glad that it worked out for you. Because you were very much looking forward to that game. So,
well, I was very, I was very, like, half joking about it. I thought it could be a complete disaster. Yeah. But I was like, I buy every Sonic game no matter what. I'm like, so, complete disaster, that'll be hilarious too. But I was like surprised by like how good it actually, like I was not expecting it to be as good as it was, like straight up. So hey man, I made it to the top five, beat out all these other bullshit bottom half games.
Way to go, Sonic. That sure is that you're insulted.
Oh, Earl, what do you got at number five?
Pokemon Legends Arceus. I think I discussed this last time we recorded and when I talked about the game. I just really adored how it took the Pokemon formula and was like, you know what? We need to shake up and we need to re-envision this game. And it wasn't that they were like, okay, we're just going to throw everything out. It's like, what can we do to kind of like take what are some stuff that's already exist that we can kind of make important? And I like that they made, like, they centered it around the Pokédex. And like having a reason, because I don't shiny hunt, I don't IV train or any of that stuff. So for me, I catch one version of a Pokemon is fine. I like that this one actually gave you a reason to catch a variety of them. Like, you got the big boys, you got the little ones, you got the ones that you're in the dark, you got the ones you got to sneak up on behind, you got the shiny ones, and like having that and like tying that to different achievements. And then tying that into the lore of the world and like having be like, you're actually doing the Pokemon research. Because a lot of the time the Pokedex is like, you caught this Pokemon. Here's all the information we have on it. Like, no, this is you going out being like, okay, they could be between this weight and this weight. They can be found at night. They can be found in grassy areas. They can be found in the snow areas. And it's you competing the Pokedex. And then actually tying the story around with those, I forget what they were called, not crazy, The very vicious wild Pokemon that were the kind of the boss encounters. I thought that was really fun.
Okay, yep.
Really great way to kind of like have like these not legendaries, but these bigger than life Pokemon tie into the story, having everybody kind of have their own regional version of like there was the one where you had to like summon with like a dance or something like that, or with a drum or something. I forget which one, and having those different traditions and like being able to kind of like really see something different in the Pokemon universe that wasn't just like, here's like his Oddish with a hat on. I absolutely adore the game.
My number five is The Quarry. I loved Until Dawn, which is what, like, that's like 6-7 years ago now at this point. Supermassive has been releasing these cinematic adventure games since then, maybe to lesser success than that. I think The Quarry is finally like, it's back in that same genre, you know, teen horror type thing. I think they hit it out of the park here. It's so good, perfect for what I wanted out of one of their games. So I unfortunately did not get to their other game that came out last year, but The Quarry did not disappoint for me.
Pretty good cast.
Yeah.
And, you know, the characters kind of grow on you as it goes on. I am not done with it. I got halfway and I just stopped. Yeah. I should really go back because the kind of the whole thing of that game is the story. And so...
Yeah, and at the end, the back half of a horror film is always the most fun. Yeah, so. It's I think it's definitely worth going back to, Jeff. I will probably go through because there's like, you know, there's different endings, there's different people, different characters can die. You can kill all the characters actually. So I may want to do like a different run at some point and see how it goes. I enjoy what that story is, and kind of the content there. So. Tony, what do you got at number four?
So number four, Horizon Forbidden West. Much in the same vein as God of War, like very similar to its predecessor. I think it does do a little more. I think some of the weapons it adds are cooler. I think the world that it establishes is much more diverse and colorful than the previous world, and there's a lot more to do in it that's interesting and compelling. Which is kind of why it exceeds God of War, in my view. I also really like Aloy as a character. I think she's a lot more interesting than Kratos, who at the end of the day is pretty thin. And there's a lot of more interesting characters in that game. So, Horizon Forbidden West.
Yeah, lots of cool characters, lots of cool like areas to visit. Cool monster designs. Like it's just a cool game. Jeff, what do you got at number four?
Number four, I have Tinykin, because it filled that Pikmin sized hole in my heart, because Nintendo is taking fucking forever to make a new Pikmin. you know, very Pikmin like, I guess. Surprisingly, like, nearly as good as something Nintendo would do. And I think Pikmin could learn a thing or two from the controls. Like, the controls felt so smooth in Tinykin. Just like the way you could just like hit a trigger and like stack yourself sky high with all your little Pikmin or Tinykin, whatever.
This is like when you don't miss your ex, but you find somebody with a similar name and haircut.
Pretty much. Like, I really like love that game. I just like tore through it on a weekend. And that's one, you know, if Nintendo delays Pikmin, which I'm sure they will, I'm sure I'll be back at Tinykin again this year.
I mean, they don't really have a date yet, though, right? It's
supposed to be this year.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if they said it, it's probably confirmed that.
Okay.
Set for release in 2023, but no date yet, so.
Earl says it's coming. Mark it down, guys.
Earl, what do you have at number four?
That's a little indie game you may or may not have heard of before called Vampire Survivors. But yes, I mean, it's really not much I can add to the rest if you haven't said at this point. But it was just one of those games that kind of came out of nowhere for me, or I think for all of us at the end of the year. And I just think that it's just a really good, well-designed game that just has some really fun characters and enemies, and it's also just like, yeah, we're gonna have like, because again, I mean, I go back to discovering the game and being like, seeing it on Twitter and being like, I do not get this is not like fun, to being like, I'm gonna stay up until like 2 a.m. on a day to play one more run, because I got it this time, I understand what's going on. And the fact that, like, yes, you know, like, the fact that it's simple, but it's also complicated, and, like, okay, like, how aggressive do you want? You want to be super aggressive. You want to make, but, like, how do you level up? What do you level up first? Do you want to, like, go radius? You know when enemies are coming at certain times, so you have to, like, okay, I want to get somewhere. When do you save pickups for? What character do you start with? What do you unlock in your skill tree early on to make the next run better, and all of these little things, and this, you know, the very charming Castlevania adjacent style, finding people in crypts and caskets and these random ass books, and like the fact that it wants to tell you everything, but it also wants you to discover everything. It is just an absolute joy to play.
Agreed. I think we all very much like Vampire Survivors.
Not that much, though.
No.
So, I mean, I think we liked it pretty a lot there, Jeff.
Yeah, it's on all of our lists. So
I'm just saying.
My number four is Shredder's Revenge. I think Tony kind of said it. It's a great kind of bringing you back to your childhood. And yeah, the boss fights are fun. The levels are fun. Like they're varied, right? It's not just every level you're going through, you're beating everybody up. Like they have the vehicle levels, and you know they play. You know, they're still, you're going through beating everybody up, but you know, you move around on your skateboard and you're kind of avoiding stuff, and just the way everything kind of moves throughout the whole game. You know, with the ease of being able to revisit a level if you want, or to find the collectibles if you need them. And then the leveling up of each of your characters, it's not like there's no big choice. It's just like kill a bunch of enemies and you'll level up, but you know, your characters get stronger as you go on. So there's reason, incentive to continue to play either as your favorite character or as other characters. The multiplayer, just, you know, six player insanity, where half of the people are always charging their their super with the taunt, and the other half are using the super at the same time. It's nuts. It's
so, so I much will fun. Say, apparently they did patch that recently.
Did they? Did,
I think you can know. I think you can know you get like one full meter with the taunts now. But it was really funny seeing that.
Yeah, it's just like everybody's just filling up their entire meter and just going off like it,
and
that.
Then they go off, and then they have other people do it. Like, okay, your turn. Yes. And so one of my favorite moments, and again, we'll hear about this game later, is like when I finally got six people to play it at once. Because I think we did what? We did six people, I think.
We did, yeah. We had six.
And it's just absolute madness of being like, I don't know. Wait, did you just, I think we just did a combo move, I think. I don't know what's going on.
But... You can't tell what's going on. It's so goofy. Ton of fun. But yeah, we'll talk more about it shortly, I'm sure. Tony, what do you got at number three?
Number three, Mountain Blade 2, Bannerlord. I think, oddly enough, this is the second time it's been on a top 10 list of mine. I think it was on my list 2 years ago. But the game, you know, released in full this October and gave me some experiences that I have never, ever had before in a game. I don't think the game is perfect, and I think the end game is kind of, lack of a better word, fucked. I don't know that it's completely finished, but the moments you get between where you're like leveling up your character and like building an army around you and then commanding that army in battles are just so, so awesome. And like being able to like be a person in the middle of a battle and like directing troops around, but also fighting and like getting that experience of like, I always look back to like that, the charge, the horse charge in, Lord of the Rings, where like, the Rohirrim are charging through all of the orcs and they're like swinging their swords left and right and left and right. They're all surrounded by enemies. And you do that. You fucking do that in the game, surrounded by guys who are trying to kill you. And it is so, so fun. And I have never had another experience of that, like that in a game. And I really, really enjoyed it. I played the hell out of this game and I highly, highly recommend it.
Oh, Mountain Blade 2. Jeff, what do you got at number three?
Number three, I have Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope. Game that I was not really looking forward to, despite liking the first one. But this really kind of blew me away, and it almost ended up as my number two. They do a great job of like coming up with different scenarios for the battles throughout the entire game. Like, it just feels fresh the whole time. The way you could kind of customize your characters with the sparks and stuff was really cool, to the point where like I had a setup where I felt pretty untouchable. Of course, I was not untouchable, but if you kept my three characters close together, like one of them had like an invincibility barrier, one of them fucking could heal, and the other one, I don't know. It's been a couple weeks now, but anyway. On top of that, like, they added an actual, like, world that you explore in between the battles in this one. Like interesting levels. You're not just going battle to battle. And, like, that world has puzzles in it. And they start off pretty simple, but by the end of the game, they're pretty big, complex puzzles. Like, in the last level, it's like a puzzle that the entire level is one big giant fucking puzzle, to the point where it becomes hard for you to like wrap your mind around the puzzle. I didn't get stuck like I did in the first game. But even if you do, you can adjust the difficulty whenever you want. I don't know. Sparks of Hope is fucking great, man. Like, yeah, you guys all missed the boat on that one, I think.
I have not missed the boat. I just know that with the last Mario and Rabbids game, if I wait like 6 months to a year, it'll be $15.
Yeah, like, I was gonna say it's already been on sale, but yeah, it'll
be less. That is exactly where I am. Is I do want to play that game.
That game is worth every fucking dollar.
I'm sure.
I spent $0 on it. I got it as a Christmas present, but it was worth that $0 Christmas present.
The problem is like knowing that it is going to, and like to your point, it has already been, but I'm trying to get it digitally. But the fact, like, I got the first one new, but the fact you could get it on eShop randomly most weeks for like $15, if not with, cheaper.
Like with the DLC, mm-hmm. like you get the gold version for like $15. Like it was nuts.
And according to Ubisoft, this one isn't doing as well as they anticipated. So I'm just waiting for that big old price drop in the sky.
It will happen, and then we will all enjoy Sparks of Hope. And tell Jeff how right he was.
I mean, it's fine.
Well, he will.
It's fine.
Only you don't know.
I played it.
I just, watching your kid play it.
I have played it myself. Mm-hmm. I just the thing about it, it's not deep strategy, which mm-hmm. is fine. Like it's enjoyable puzzle solving game. That's what it is.
Wow.
Sorry, Jeff. Like you're adding a whole lot of depth, but I played games that are like deep like this all the time, and this isn't like at the top tier. Like you're out. You are out of your depth.
It is a
strategy game of the year according to the Jeff Awards.
Yeah. So. Did they even nominate a strategy? I think Total War was the only strategy game actually nominated.
Yeah, it was a weird, weird selection of games they had. Earl, what do you got at number three?
What do I have at number three? Oh, I Remain a Kid and a Squid. It's Splatoon 3.
Oh no.
I'm not going to sing. Don't worry.
Please, we hope that you were going to sing. That was why I'm here.
But I know Jeff wasn't the biggest fan of it, but I think that it, again, I think fundamentally I just like the base game. I just like what Splatoon has been since the first one, and I think they continue to find new, it continues to be fresh. It's been, I think, the third game in like 8 years or something like that. I think it has a unique style. I love Salmon Run. I like any horde mode really, but Salmon Run's a ton of fun. That big rush mode. I enjoyed the campaign. I know Jeff was not a big fan of it. I think it was I like the challenges that they were like, we're gonna have you use the weapons in different ways, and they do challenge you to use a bunch of different weapons. And
not shooter, it's a puzzle game, Earl.
Huh?
Nothing.
Oh, yes. Tony.
But yes, I mean, honestly, I don't know, because I understand it. I've said it before. Like, if you've played Splatoon, this is nothing new. It doesn't change anything in the format here, but I've just always been a fan of it, and this is just the latest entry in that. It's just a good time. Just a good time.
Good. My number three is, Tony said it would be people would question if we did not have Pac-Man games. Pac-Man Museum Plus.
You already have
Pac-Man. Yeah, I have another Pac-Man game.
Now it's double Chris. Now we are completely
safe.
This is such a weird choice to me. Go ahead.
I played 50 hours of it, Jeff. Like I beat every challenge in that game. I played all the different Pac-Man games they had. There were some I had never played before. Like there was a DS game that they've adapted really well to it, where you roll around. It's a pack and roll, I think it was called.
Yeah,
a lot of fun. I had a good time, like unlocking all the challenges and unlocking everything in the arcade. To the point where I did unlock everything except one achievement, which glitched on the Pac-Man Tetris game.
No!
Yeah, so I can't get missing like 15 points from it, which is weird because I got the achievement for getting all the achievements, but don't have that one. But yeah, I enjoy Pac-Man, and like it's a very good collection of it. And this is the caveat, I played it on PC because it was unplayable on the Xbox. where frames would drop and you would get lag in the controls in regular Pac-Man, which should not happen. Like, it is unacceptable on the Xbox, but once I shifted over to PC, like, it was just something that stuck with me through the whole year.
I didn't even know there was two Pac-Man games to nominate this year.
That is, you would find me. Them. If there weren't, Chris would create them.
Pac-Man Museum Plus was on, it launched on Game Pass. Pac-Man World Repack was released as, I don't think that hit Game Pass. I think it was just, you had to buy that one. Yep, two Pac-Man games this year. So we'll see what this year has in store for Pac-Man. Tony, what do you got at number two?
At number two, I have everyone's favorite RPG and group comedy from this year. You know the game I'm talking about. It's NBA 2K23. I mean, the basketball in this game is great. It's fun, and I really love it. But the star of the show really is this whole epic RPG quest story thing that they have built in the city in the game. Like, there are so many things in the game to experience that have absolutely nothing to do with basketball. And it's basically you follow your player's career and you're trying to like finish these quests to win over fans in your city. So the basic premise of the game is you're drafted on draft night. Everybody in the city you're drafted to wishes they had drafted someone else. So you spend this entire time going on quests and like trying to win over the fans of the city. And they do it super, super well. You have this team around you that's, you know, giving you missions and helping you out. It's like your manager and your girlfriend and your agent, like, and they're coming out at you with all this stuff, and so you end up like doing things like photo shoots and starring in commercials and doing skateboarding tricks and like doing all of this really, really odd but fun stuff in a way that is interesting and compelling. Like, the story is fun, the dialogue is fantastic. I can't, like, the thing is super well acted. I can't say enough about how great the non-basketball parts of this game is. And all of that with the, like, it's not even like a caveat. The basketball is great, and it really, really is enjoyable. It does have that NBA 2K thing where it is kind of pay to win, and you can throw dollars in to upgrade your player and play better, but you can actually play super well without doing that, and I kind of discovered that. In fact, struggling with my player who wasn't very good made me so much better at the game than I have ever been before. So I really enjoyed this one. It was this close to being my game of the year. So close.
Then he picked Elden Ring.
That's right. Then I picked Elden Ring.
I'm not normally a basketball guy, but I think between what you're saying about like the goofy career mode and like all the other stuff that they put in, where like you could start a franchise in like the 80s and
yeah,
this game seems really cool.
Yeah, you could play through all of Michael Jordan's greatest moments, Jeff.
Cool, really fun. Cool.
Yeah, I keep an eye on that and pick it up at a discount.
Yeah, I was gonna say I have no interest in this game, and the way you described it, like, I kind of want to play the story mode now.
Right?
So 2K does go on sale for really cheap sometimes.
It does.
So, something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I'll put on my wish list and keep an eye on it.
I'm almost certain if I do it, I'm going to get a bunch of messages saying, did your Xbox get hacked?
What are you doing, Earl? You're playing a basketball game?
Earl hates sports. What?
Jeff, what do you got at number two?
At number two, I have the second best looking game of 2022, Kirby and the Forgotten Land. So bright, so colorful, so beautiful, so joyous. When you beat a level, you get the
it is just a nice, it's like a joyous kind of
thing. It really is. Like, you want some endorphins, here you go. Lots of little cool like secrets and like ideas in throughout the game. They do some fun stuff with the mouthful mode, like where you're you're basically swallowing.
Awful, man.
Yeah, I was about to say.
I've ruined it for Jeff. It's over. Sorry,
swallowing giant objects and wrapping your whole body around them and turning into those objects.
Helping himself right
what
now.
Kind of sexual ass game are you playing?
I think Kirby has really cool boss fights too. And you know, like kind of very light RPG elements, like you know, you just evolve your different power ups that you have and stuff. I don't know, man. This game really surprised me. I started to play through it again just to make sure I wasn't crazy by putting it this high, and I wasn't. This game's great. It's neck and neck between it and Mario and Rabbids for like I think the best Nintendo game of the year. But this one is actually made by Nintendo.
All right. I guess
it gets a little bit of an edge, but
yeah.
It's just a joy, and it's one that I know I'll play, you know, several times throughout the year. So,
all right, Kirby and the Forgotten Land, Earl. What's your number two?
My number two is, I hope this came out last year. I double checked. Nobody Saves the World.
It did. Yes.
Yeah, he came out in January, I think. But yeah, I it was just such a weird but fun kind of dungeon crawler. I love that they tied it into the different characters you unlocked and everybody having those abilities, and then being able to kind of like mix and match those abilities, classes, and it's just ridiculous. You know, you got a horse. You got a witcher. You got a necromancer. You got a zombie. At some point, you're an egg who you have to go around and find five faces for a dragon to sit on you to hatch into a dragon. There was some really fun writing. It was, you know, it was goofy and not cool, but it was also kind of fun. And I think Chris and I disagreed on this. I think because I played in co-op, I had a great time with my friends, and I have the little challenges they had where it's like, you know, like if you enemies do double damage or you don't regain like magic as you do, and it's like it was a way for you to approach combat differently so it didn't get tedious after I think it was like 20-25 hours or something like that. But yeah, I still recommend it. I think it's a great game, a great package.
Yeah, I really liked it. We did disagree, and I do think it was because you had an extra person with you, right? So like,
stuff is easy to grind.
Yeah, it's harder to do those challenges and those dungeons that have the special requirements when you have another person there. If you're doing it by yourself, it makes it a little tough. But overall, I fully agree. Really like that game. My number two is Signalis, which very on brand for my list this year. It is a retro themed game. It is a retro themed PlayStation 1 style survival horror game. I know Jeff never made it out of the opening area. He never even saw an enemy in the game. So
nope. I actually went back to after I said that to you. I went back to try it again, same thing. And it's not like, I know if I messed around more, I would get out of it, but I just, for me personally, I didn't care for it, but I also, I didn't give it enough of a, you know, I didn't play it enough to like really have much to say.
You never even got to the combat stuff or like the inventory management, which is very old school. Like you only have 6 slots. If you drop something, it's gone forever. So like, you have to really kind of make some hard choices in how you're handling your inventory, or and it has a lot of the old style design where it's like, you know, enemies will go down, and if you don't like completely destroy them, they can come back. So like later you'll come back to a room and like the enemies will revive. So it has like a challenge in that way. It doesn't necessarily play like old school Resident Evil because it doesn't have tank control. So plays like you remember playing those games, and it not being frustrating, but it comes with all the like the trappings, and then the puzzles that they have in there are really cool. Like I had a notebook out, like drawing shapes and stuff to come up with the codes and stuff for different different puzzles and different rooms. And I had a ton of fun with it, but I could see where it would not be for everyone, but definitely worked for me. Tony, what do you got at number one?
Number one game of the year is actually the game I'm playing right now. Marvel's Midnight Suns. It kind of saddens me that this game didn't come out until December, because I don't think a lot of people will have this on their game of the year lists because they didn't really have a chance to. I didn't know what to expect having played, the developer's previous games were the XCOM games, and the fact that they had the Marvel license, everybody was thinking Marvel XCOM, and that's not what they built. What they built here is kind of a game that's a combination card game, like with some, you know, lighter tactical elements, and then a like Mass Effect style game where you go around and talk to people and figure out what's going on with them and solve their problems. And I really like what they've built. It's like the comic book lover's dream. It really plays into the history of all of the characters in the game and really brings like all of their histories to the forefront. Each character is super well. I love the voice actors that they chose. I love how they've like built the characters out. They all feel like Wolverine feels like Wolverine should feel. Blade really feels like Blade. Captain America is not Chris Evans, but goddamn, it could be. It's like every character is as you would expect. And then actually playing the game, it starts off with you know, what kind of seems like a very light strategy type thing. And then it builds on it and builds on it and builds on it, which is an awesome way of like building a really cool, complex system without having this like tough tutorial to fight your way through. Like the game itself is the tutorial, which is kind of like how I like strategy games to work. So you start off, you're just kind of like pushing people into each other, and that's fine. And at the end, you're like using spells to like throw them all around the map and throw them into stuff. And it builds and builds. It gets cooler and cooler. And as your characters develop, as they advance, they get cooler and cooler abilities. And as you progress through that whole Mass Effect style, I'm going to solve your problems, I'm going to build a nice relationship with you, you'll unlock even cooler abilities from those characters. Stuff like, I will taunt every enemy on the screen while simultaneously making myself invulnerable. So everyone's attacking me, but they can't do anything to me, ha ha ha. And that kind of stuff is so fun once you finally unlock it. So I have super, super enjoyed this game. I really think it is the best game of this year.
Okay. High praise there. Jeff, we know what's coming.
Yeah, Jeff doesn't need to speak. Just shut up, Jeff. Just shut up.
Tell us what you got there, Jeff.
My number one is a great game. Maybe the greatest game. I think it would have been more fun if we played together, but even just playing it by myself, Power Wash Simulator really, really kind of blew me away. Kind of blew my hair back. No, of course, it's Elden Ring.
You have broken my, I'm like doing some like early calculations so we can like start. You're breaking my stuff, Jeff.
Tell us about
Elden Ring.
It's Elden Ring. There's Elden Ring, and then there's everything else. So, you know, if you want me to get into, do you want me to make my case for it right now?
No, not now. Now you can tell us why you think it's the best.
Case for you.
Yeah, this is why it's your game of the year. Just tell us.
Well, that's kind of my case for it. Hopefully I won't go on too long, but for me, it's... I think Breath of the Wild was like an evolution in like the open world game, where you could kind of go in any direction and you were going to find something interesting. It wasn't a bunch of copy-pasted shit. But it only kind of got halfway there in Breath of the Wild, right? Because you had the shrines everywhere, but they're just like little mini levels, and they you know, they kind of all looked the same. And you didn't have like the real temples in Breath of the Wild. Like you had four big levels that weren't that big, and they weren't like traditional Zelda temples. I think that's like the one thing that is kind of lacking in Breath of the Wild. For as much detail they had in that big open world, you know, it was just kind of like little bite-sized things everywhere. Elden Ring has that. It has these catacombs and these caves that, you know, you'll find if you go in every direction. They're a little more hidden. But also, more often than not, you're going to find full actual levels in Elden Ring inside this massive, you know, open world game. And even more than that, there's like most of the levels are optional and they're hidden. It's like, it's wild to me. Like, the level of design in these levels is so good that like most developers would not like hide them and tuck them into a little corner of the game and go, if you find it, you find it. It's a nice surprise for you to find it. That to me is the, you know, the big thing about it. Like you might find a hidden level, but at the end of that level, you might find another level hidden inside that level. It's like worlds inside of worlds. It'd be like if you're going through a Zelda temple, and inside the Zelda temple, you found a Zelda temple. You know what I mean? And inside of that, you might find another Zelda temple. You know, I could go into specifics on that if you want, or I could just shut up and leave it at that.
We'll leave it there for right now. We'll let Earl explain his number one.
There's nothing to explain with my number one. I'm super biased. I'm not going to hide that fact. I mean, even before the year started, I think in most of 2021, I was like, I had my money ready for this game, which is Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge. And I would have bought the game no matter what. It ended up being on Game Pass. I still bought the game two other times. And the fact that I own it three times, I've beaten it, I would say probably a dozen times. I mean, granted, it's also 2 hours. But I play with you. I play with other Twitter groups. I play with some of my college friends. I would probably be out on Times Square right now, whoring myself out for a group to play Shredder's Revenge with. I'm a huge fan of beat 'em ups. I think one of the first games I inducted to the Hall of Fame was Turtles in Time. And the fact that this takes that format and that formula and it actually evolves into modernizing it while still feeling true to what those games are. Like Tony said, it has absolutely amazing boss battles. I think that every character feels unique and distinct. I love the music. Like I said, I own the soundtrack on vinyl. I love the stages. I love the collectibles. I love the throwbacks to the 80s cartoon. I love the character design. It is one of my favorite games in recent memories, and I am so happy that, I mean, calling a spade, after 20 some odd years of Ninja Turtles having a rough go at it in video games, that we finally got something that I can truly put up there as like, not just like something I enjoy because I'm a Turtles fan, but something I think is a truly great game and probably one of the best beat 'em ups of all time. And I would recommend this to anybody to check out.
All right. Shredder's Revenge, Earl's number one. My number one is Atari 50, the anniversary celebration.
Does it have Pac-Man on it?
No, Pac-Man is not on it. They do talk about Pac-Man, I believe, in some of the you know, documentary pieces. Because Pac-Man was a big release on the 2600, but they do not have that version in the game. I love, you know, video game history, and this is just a phenomenal, you know, celebration of that. As Jeff said, not all the games hold up very well. I think their core games do. I think stuff like Centipede and Asteroids and that stuff still, like, amazingly well done, like the,
considering like they're like 2 kilobytes or whatever the fuck. Yeah, they are. Like,
yeah, you know. It's like ridiculously small games, and they were, you know, programmed directly on the hardware. So it's all machine programming. Like those games still amazingly well. Missile Command, great game. Like, and there's a reason those games are still around, you know, 40 years, 50 years later now in some cases. But a lot of them, like Adventure, like, I mean, not a game that holds up very well. Those Sword Quest games are not very good. But the history behind them and Atari as a company, really cool. And as Jeff said, like they added like updated versions or reimaginings of a handful of games too. So like there's like, hey, here's these things that you remember, but we've put a spin on it, and they're really cool too. But it's really the history there behind everything is really the kind of the draw, and it was just like, this is like the coolest thing for me. So yeah, that's my number one. That's all of our top tens. Let's put together a joint top 10 here. There are five games that hit all, not all of ours, but joint, you know, they hit multiple lists out of ours. They were Vampire Survivors, Turtles, Power Wash Simulator, Atari 50, and Pokemon Legends, or Arceus Legends. I don't know if all of them end up staying here, but I think they should probably be in the conversation as they hit multiple lists. And then, of course, you know, the number ones here from individual lists: Elden Ring, Marvel's Midnight Suns. Shredder's Revenge was also a multiple game, so that's already on there. So I think that they need to be on this list as well.
Absolutely, they do.
And then maybe some number twos as well. Nobody Saves the World, Kirby, and 2K3. I think they could probably fit in here. If we drop some of the lower ones, maybe we could put in, you know, Mount and Blade or Rabbids or Splatoon 3 or something. But I think that's maybe our foundation for our 10 is there. I don't know if there's something specific that you guys want to add in that we should cut off, or that like this should definitely be on there. This shouldn't be, even though it was on multiple lists.
I get your logic. You pull from the ones and the twos, and
yeah,
and the multiples, like the ones that everybody touched on.
Yeah. All right. So where do we go from here?
I mean, do we want to start at the top? Because I think the conversation at the top is a debate between two games. Based on our lists,
I think
those games are Shredder's Revenge and Vampire Survivor. I don't think there's any other games that played that are
as a joint list. I think you're right. Like as a joint list, those are the games that we all enjoyed for the most part. Turtles did not make Jeff's list, so I think that may. But also,
yeah, I'll tell it right now.
What was that, Jeff?
I'll kill it right now. I don't give a shit.
No, we're not gonna kill it.
We're not killing it. It is not being removed from this list, Jeff. That's not happening.
Jeff is like, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Chris, maybe Chris is Shredder, or not Chris, Jeff. Jeff could be Shredder.
Jeff,
that's
Jeff Shredder, and this is his revenge. So I hate vampires and turtles. Fuck them.
You are now Turtle Soup.
Yeah. I mean, I think you know Jeff's arguments for Elden Ring, Tony's arguments for Marvel's Midnight Suns are great. Like I think they're two great games that individually you guys love. That
yes,
either we didn't play, the rest of us didn't play, or the rest of us did not love as much.
You know, when I was talking about Elden Ring, when you're like, explain why for you, I guess I could have explained one thing. I've played through the game 9 times.
Yeah, I think that's why it belongs high on our list. I think
I've put 450 hours into it. I'm still playing it.
Yeah, and I mean, you've like you took like a month off and jumped back in, and like you've been jumping in helping me when I've been like intermittently playing. You volunteered to help Tony, but I don't think he's ever going back to play that again.
That's something I should have also mentioned is that like I love co-op in it. And I love, since I can't get you guys to play the fucking game, I will go on Reddit and find people that need help and go help
them. Like, do you need help? I am here to help.
I mean, there's a board specifically for summoning people. Like, you know, hey, I need help with Margit or whatever, you know, whatever. Yeah. It's usually near the end game, which kind of sucks because those are the ones that are really hard for me. But you know, yeah, I love that. I love that feeling of just. That's one of my. I guess I should have touched on that more too. Like that part of the game, the multiplayer, the community aspect of it, the attitude of, if I say I'm going to help you, I'm going to help you till we kill it. Like it's not. I don't care if we die 50 times. And I've done that for other players, but other players have done it for me. And I love that. I love that feeling. And then like finally you beat it, and just like. Hell yeah, dude. All right, see you later. I love that part of it. So, anyways, I don't know how we got
into this. I feel like that's kind of an attitude you get in, like, niche games. And like, I kind of feel like this was Elden Ring's year for a lot of people because it's a niche game and there aren't really any other, like, stellar games that blot out the sun for all other people. So that the proponents of Elden Ring get a lot, like they have a much stronger argument this year than they might have in other years, because it's not really like, can I stand behind like God of War and say, oh, look at how groundbreaking? I can't look at Horizon Zero Dawn and say, look how this changed. It didn't change anything. It gave me a really good thing, but it didn't like push the genre for it.
I could say that I think Elden Ring is groundbreaking. I also don't think it's niche. I think it's kind of broke through.
I think it in this particular year it's really great for a very good subset of people. There are a large subset of people who won't, or a large subset, a large majority of the people who won't touch that game ever.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's. That's with a lot of games.
It's like literally any game. I'm like Jeff, and I argue for this from a place where I have lived like forever, right? Because the games that I love and absolutely adore never end up at the top, and they never will, because strategy games are a niche set. Like when Total War, when Total,
hold on,
wait, no. Let me finish my thought. So, my thought is exactly spot on. When Total War Warhammer 2 came out, it was the best strategy game ever made. The problem is, I have no argument for that as a game of the year because I know that 95% of gamers will never touch that game. They never will, and I think the
argument this year, Tony, though, is like yeah. Elden Ring was like, I think it was the number three selling game of the year.
It was a very, but it was a number three selling game in a year where there wasn't really a bunch of banner titles like you have in other years. Like it was a weak year.
I don't know.
And if it hadn't been such a weak year, Elden Ring would not have ended up where it ended up.
I don't know how you call a number three selling game. And also, you know, just to mention, the game that won pretty much every game of the year.
Well, again, like, here's the thing, though. It like, wins Game of the Year awards, but it has won over a very specific set of jaded people. And I can't even read games journalism anymore, but these are the people who are picking this thing as Game of the Year, and they're so sick of other games that this kind of challenges them in a way that they're not normally challenged, and they like that, and you like that, and that's fine, but it's just not something that appeals to me at all, and I don't think it appeals to a lot of people.
I don't think any of my argument rests on it being challenging.
I didn't say anything there about it being, it challenges them in a specific way. Like it's not that it's hard.
I don't know. Yeah, I just think it's a weird stretch to call it niche or niche. When it's kind of pretty successful. It's like it kind of broke through to the mainstream with this one a little bit. I would maybe say it for the others in their series.
I was off in my. It was the second best selling game. It sold 17.5 million copies.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like few people who are jaded. That's a pretty big game.
Yeah, I mean it is now a mainstream game. I think
that's not all I'm trying to say.
It was second to Modern Warfare 2. In sales, which is you know, I mean, you could make an argument that, you know, Modern Warfare also niche, but like for a specific, you know, subset of gamers, like that's all they play.
Yeah.
I don't know if the argument that it's a you know, 'cause every video game, right? Like there's what 100 plus million people playing video games. So, you know, if we're going by percentages, every game is niche.
But at some point you have to say it's pretty popular, you know.
It is. I mean, it's popular. I'll give you, it's popular.
It's a very popular game. I think like as us compiling a list for us, right, as a joint list for the four of us for this show, it is popular with you, right?
Yeah. Like, no. It's... Again, if we're trying to come to a consensus type thing here, rather than be correct, sure.
You mean
yes.
Incorrect.
I mean, we always come to a consensus, Jeff. We're never correct.
if it's just a straight consensus, though.
What do you always pick Final Fantasy 15? I remember that specifically and regret it when I think about it.
Yeah, me.
If it's just a straight consensus, though, then there's no reason to even debate it at the end. You can just go, okay, this is the game that everybody liked that was on their list somewhere. That's what the number one is.
Well,
that's kind of what we're doing here.
Well, I think that's like right, like and right. So we have these five that everyone is on, but I like, you know, if I go by points, right, like Pokemon, Power Wash. They're not at the top of that. They're behind. Like even if you know anybody else is number twos, number threes, even. But I do think like Vampire Survivors, Turtles. There's a debate there on like which one is it. Where I think that there's some input here because like it wasn't Vampire Survivors was not high. Like it was highest on Earl's list.
Which is the problem with selecting it as our game of the year, because Earl picked the other game higher than that.
Yes.
Right, and like then, but the other side of that is also Turtles was not picked by Jeff at all, right? So it's like,
I'm not signing off on Turtles for game of the year, I'm sorry.
That's a why not.
Hey, if we're doing consensus, if we're doing this mathematically, Vampire Survivors fucking wins.
Well,
I mean, he's not wrong. Like Vampire Survivors is a point ahead.
Okay, yes. Vampire Survivors wins.
Secondly, I don't think Turtles is that good. I think Vampire Survivors is pretty fun.
Oh no.
Okay, so let's move further down the list. So at the bottom here, right? So like I've done a draft list in my head that is on the spreadsheet.
Not in your head.
So at the bottom I have Pokemon, Atari 50, Power Wash. Is there anything there we cut? I think Atari 50 belongs
say you're number one.
Yeah, like, I am happy with that.
I feel like everyone's number one should make the top 10.
Yeah. I am fine with like it being number 10. We want to put a different game on this list, and cut something. I think that's fine. But like, where, how do we feel about Pokemon and Power Wash? Power Wash made three of our lists. Pokemon was two.
Power Wash its face and drown it.
Okay. No, absolutely not.
I think it's just a key if we're just, I mean, again, I don't think either one is like super strong. I think I might have had the highest, and that was still number five. I would say, and even though I had Power Wash, I think Power Wash was one that there was consensus that it was a game that we all enjoyed. And I think we can agree with that, Jeff, right? That we can do that for the other ones where it's just like we all, majority agreed with this is a good game this year.
So, what if we do Atari 50 at 10, Power Wash at 9?
Boy. Yes. Okay.
Okay. So that opens up a slot, right? We cut Pokemon. That opens up a slot for, like, I don't know, Mario and Rabbids, Splatoon, Mount and Blade. Something could slot in there if we wanted.
Are those our choices?
I mean, you could fit in. If you want to recommend anything, like I'm kind of like, I don't feel strongly enough about moving Signalis or Pac-Man Museum into our top 10. Like I don't think it's necessary that they are there. It's gotten the recognition I needed from it. So like there's an open slot for like a game.
I'm just saying I put 213 hours into Bannerlord. I'm going to throw that out there right now.
And are you cool with it being at like 8?
Yeah.
Right. Is everybody else okay with Mountain Blade at 8? Based on Tony's love of weird strategy games?
Sure.
I will also say Sean played this game obsessively. It's fun. It really is. I wish you guys had tried it.
That was one I was interested in, and it is on Xbox, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, I think I did almost buy it. I think it was on sale a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I'll get to it.
If you wait long enough, its predecessor ended up on Game Pass. I will assume that this will end up on Game Pass at some point as well.
Yeah.
We wait long enough, everything ends up there. All right, so that's 8, 9, 10... kind of settled. Onto our actual list. Any argument for or against Tony's weird basketball RPG?
It's not
7?
Weird. It's so much fun.
I mean, you don't so describe fun. It as weird, but I will say
you straight up did describe
I guess it's like it's not what you expect from a sports game. I think that's the thing that like gets me. Like there's so much that's not sports that is interesting and compelling and fun. That is weird to me. But also good. Weird in a good way. Good way.
I like you said, I'm actually very much more curious to check this game out now. So I'm okay with keeping it.
Kirby, Nobody Saves the World. God. How do we feel about those?
Kirby, which is oddly sexual for some reason. Sexual Kirby.
So are we putting Mouthful at 5 and Nobody Saves the World at 6? Or?
Fucked. I'd be happy to see Kirby on the list.
Well, it's gonna be on the list. I mean,
I think it's definitely on the list, Joe. But do you care where the placement is?
No, again, as I stated before, there was Elden Ring, and then there was other games. So that's my main focus here.
Well, we have Elden Ring at like 12, right? That's where it goes.
Elden Ring will be in our top 4. So.
I don't think Jeff's going to be satisfied with the top 4.
I can tell you more about it.
No, please go.
You can. Give us a second. Just give us a second. Earl, how strongly do you feel about Nobody Saves the World?
I've got to be honest. I mean, I don't necessarily feel super. I'm okay with it wherever it ends. Let's go with that.
Let's move it over. Nobody Saves the World at 6. Kirby at 5.
Okay.
Which brings us to the final four here that we have. Vampire Survivors, which is on everybody's list, but not nobody's number one, and the highest it was 4. Turtles, which was on 3 of our 4 lists, and Jeff seems adamant that no, he will not.
It's between Vampire Survivors and Turtles. I'm sorry, like.
Yeah, there's
no contest, dude. And I played them both. Like, it's just no contest.
And then Elden Ring and Midnight Suns, which would be the next kind of two there.
I'm going to propose this sacrifice for Jeff. Midnight Suns at 4, Elden Ring at 3. This is only because I respect you, Jeff.
Okay.
Well, I think, Jeff, I also think, like, moving Elden Ring any... I'm not sure if we're going to be able to move Elden Ring any higher because of Tony's dislike of it so much.
My rage will take over, and...
Here's the thing. I know it's not going to hit number one, and so give it a good showing at 3, that's, you know, it's fine.
I do think it is more mainstream than... than Tony is letting on.
But. Yeah, I don't know. I think you're taking your experience with the game, Tony, and thinking that that's like the wider experience.
I hate it.
I also think that Tony's experience is maybe similar to a lot of people that bought the game as well. Yeah. I
do wonder how many people who bought it and got to that point like, fuck this, this sucks.
I can look through the.
Could you do that, Jeff? I would just like to know, like, achievement.
Well, I can't do it right here on the show, but I can look through the achievement list on my Xbox, and I just want to see, like, how many, like, what percentage of players beat the first boss, or, you know.
Yeah.
I can tell you that right now, actually.
Why? How do you?
Because I can look at the list. So Margit's the first boss, right?
Yeah. Jeff? Yeah.
So half of the people beat it.
Half,
50% made it.
Half
to the first
people boss. Beat the first boss. Jesus yes. Christ, that's fucking insane. Yeah.
Like insane good or insane bad?
I think that's insanely bad.
So, Jeff, here's another stat for you. So the first achievement you get is making it to that round table, right? Like I think that. I guess you could
is that
beat
the first one you got.
It's the first one I got. Like that. Yeah. That's like one of the first two, right? That or okay. or the first boss, right? Like, sure. So that one is at 57%.
That's really weird.
I don't know what the next and like all the other achievements are secret, so I'm not really sure what. But it's one of the first two achievements. Like,
I guarantee so many people like this game won all these game weirds. Like, I'm gonna try that. They're like, oh my god, what is this? Oh god, save me! There were a lot.
I'm interested to see like how many people beat the final boss. I know that there's like achievements I've gotten that like 1% of players have or whatever, you know. But I think the final boss is probably somewhere between 5 and 10%. I'll let you guys know in the group chat after this, but.
Yeah, I'd be interested in
dude, 50% didn't beat the first boss. Jesus.
Who is the final boss, Jeff?
It is
like what's the achievement?
It is the Elden Radagon / Elden Lord. I don't know what the name of the achievement is.
Trying to see here. Ancestor Spirit. I mean, like, there's a bunch that here, like, it looks like a third of people beat. But yeah, it's hard because most of them are hidden, so it's like I have to reveal them. I don't know exactly what I'm looking for. So, yeah, let us know after the fact. But, okay. So Elden Ring at 3. Jeff played 7 billion hours of it.
Yes.
And it is, you know, everybody besides us loves it. So, Jeff can hold that over our heads that once again
we were wrong.
You guys are the weird ones. You guys didn't get it, not me. I'm not the weird one here.
I'm just saying I killed 10,000 people in Bannerlord. That's all I'm saying.
I killed 10,000 people in fucking Vampire Survivors in 10 minutes.
That's true.
That is, yeah. That's fair.
So did I. I got that one too.
Okay, so this is from April. But according to Reddit, less than 37% of people have beaten the game, and 6% of people have gotten all of the achievements.
In Elden Ring? That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
And I'm on true achievements right now. 16% of the people have actually gotten all the achievements in the game.
Okay. I don't have all the achievements.
True achievements is kind of a bad, like, the people on here are obsessed.
Yeah, they're crazy.
Yeah.
I don't even I still have to, like, get every, like, legendary weapon and shit to get all the achievements, and I've still not done that, and I'm probably just, like, missing one weapon, and I'm just so lazy about achievements.
I was just more curious about that one, because it has been purchased by other people.
27% is pretty good. It's, like, the last three bosses in that game are hard. Like, they're not easy. So.
Yes, but I would be very fascinated. Because, I mean, I remember, again, I've not played it, and I just know who I am. But I do remember when it was coming out, a lot of talk about, like, this being the most accessible one. And it is. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's accessible in a way that people can actually play and enjoy it. If that makes sense.
It does.
I could give you anecdotal evidence of people who, like, never got into those games and got into it. So,
It is. I think it is compared to, like, the Demon Souls, Dark Souls, which are the other two that I have experience with.
Compared to Sekiro, it's a breeze.
Yeah, I mean, it is way easier to get into. It is also, I think Tony ran into this, so it is also a game that, like, immediately, like, you get out, it's like, all right, here I am. And, like, if you have a mindset, and I think Tony and I both kind of have this mindset of, like, there's an enemy there, I should be able to kill it.
Yeah.
It stomps on you immediately, and it's hard to get that out of your head that, like, and I think, Jeff, you're like, no, the game is telling you, don't go there. But it's like...
Well, that's like... Most other enemies around there are pushovers, but yeah, that one is there to, like, let you know, hey, sometimes you gotta.
Yeah, I think that's hard for a certain type of player, and I think there's a lot of people that just, like, they're used to playing games in a certain way, and it's hard to break out of that.
Yeah, it wouldn't bother me so much if that fight was tough. But it's impossible, and that annoys me.
I know someone who did not realize that it was there to teach you not to fight him and beat him. It took him 3 hours, but he beat him.
Yeah, there's no way I would spend 3 hours.
Yeah, like,
first enemy of a
game. Mr. Too Fresh beat that motherfucker at the very beginning of the game as a low level character. Shout out to Matt.
Did he get some sort of absurd reward? Like, I feel like he deserves it after doing that.
Pride of doing it, the joy of killing it.
And then he sat down at a campfire, Tony, and the guy came back.
No, that guy doesn't come back.
Okay, so he's a boss.
Yeah, he's a boss.
Okay.
Well, that's good to know. You know, it's just like a... Yeah, it's a... I like that, though, in RPGs, when like, oh, this guy is too tough, and then I go level up and do a bunch of shit. Also, I come back and I whoop his ass, or get
yeah, but normally they don't do that, like, when you come out of the cave, that, like, that would be like Fallout, right? Like, you leave Fallout and all of a sudden, like, a level 50 50 like rad scorpion or something, like, just stomps on you, and it's like, what the fuck?
Especially after this game teaches you that, like, right at the beginning with the little crab guy that, like, automatically you could kill the crab thing too at the beginning, the thing that, like, kills you and then you end up into the game. You could kill him.
Yeah. All right. So that's where we're there at three. But we got two games left here.
Yes.
What are we doing with them?
Bad. Vampire Survivors or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's
Revenge. That's where we're at. It's super easy for me. This is like not hard at all. It's fucking Vampire Survivors.
I'm okay with that.
That makes sense to me. Like, I had Vampire Survivors higher on my list. Although Chris did not, and then Earl had it at number one, so maybe it's not quite that easy.
So I will say this, that when and I locked my my list. Like, I did not, I locked my list, you know, weeks ago. And I had not finished Vampire Survivors. I think, like, if I had not locked my list, and I probably would have placed it higher. I have put like 30 hours into that game. I 100%ed the main game, bought the DLC. Grant, that's not like a giant purse string there. The DLC's $2. So, like,
oh, my money bags here.
But like, I bought it because I wanted more. And that's not to say I'm wouldn't
okay with it being a game of the year. I think it's a great example of a game of the year, especially for something that literally came out at the tail end of 2022 to kind of be this surprising game that none of us saw coming, and I had no expectations for whatsoever, and ended up absolutely upping.
Yeah,
but part of you know, for me it's just real simple, but. But also, you know, they're both new games, but, like, Vampire Survivors is a new game. You know what I mean? Like, it's... Shredder's Revenge is, like, honoring something from our past, right? Like, this is kind of a new thing that came out of nowhere, and...
It looks like an old game.
It looks like an old game, but it's not quite like anything I've played, you know? Like,
no, it's weird.
It's like other things I've played, you know? Like... what was it? Tony said, like, kind of like a twin stick shooter type deal, but which fuck you for hating twin stick shooters, but
I don't love them.
But yeah, it's its own new thing, right? So that's another reason. Like, look, for me, it's real easy. Like, I think Shredder's Revenge is a pretty good example of the genre, and it's a nice nostalgia piece. But this was like a new thing that felt fresh. And, you know, I'm still playing it. I'm not still playing Shredder's Revenge. It's, again, my vote goes all the way to Vampire Survivors.
Well, you're playing Shredder's Revenge must begin with, but...
I played it. Well, what the fuck? I mean, that's the other thing with the game. It's like, I played it, done. Like, this isn't 1992. I'm not going to play, like, a beat-em-up over and over freaking...
Yeah, they're fun.
Well,
he says play Elden Ring over and over again.
Elden Ring. I also think Earl has said that he is good with it being.
There's no argument here.
I want to beat the dead turtle.
You want to beat the dead turtle? He's just
dead annoyed already. Stop.
We're just gonna get Peter called on us next week. So we heard something about beating a dead turtle here. I'm like, I don't know what you heard.
Okay, so just a circle back. Jeff, is the Elden Lord achievement, is that the that's all the achievements, right?
Elden Lord, become an Elden Lord is like the basic ending. So it's probably the most common of the endings you can get.
11%.
That's pretty good.
Is it?
I think that is not including, you know, there's going to be people who played through it and got the Age of Stars ending, which is, like, if you did this one side quest, then you get that ending. So, like, I think it's probably closer to what you said on the true achievements, which is what? Like, you said something like 30% of people fucking beat the game?
Higher? That's 30% of people have that achievement.
There's got to be an achievement specifically for killing Radagon / Elden Lord.
So I see Age of Stars and
Elden Beast is, I'm sorry, Radagon / Elden Beast is the final boss. I don't know. So there's gotta be achievement.
Age of Stars is 12%, so.
Well, that is an optional side, like, that's the best ending. So 12% of players got the best ending. So that's pretty good.
Lord of Frenzied Flame is at 6%.
That is the like worst ending. That's like the evil ending, which I finally just got.
So
on my eighth playthrough.
So at the very least, 12% of all people have beaten.
I mean, 12% have gotten the best ending of the game.
Well, so, right, but like
that means they did like a 5-hour side quest.
Yeah,
and beat the game.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know if if all the people that got the Elden Lord or the Lord of Frenzied Flame, like if they are second, third, like you beat it what 44 times or something like that.
So, yeah,
like you haven't gotten all the achievements yet, but you're getting there. I think 10% for a game that requires what that game requires of you is probably pretty good. I should really look at like the Persona achievements and like anyway, Vampire Survivors is our game of the year, followed by Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge, much to Jeff's ire.
No, it's I'm just whatever. Go ahead.
It's clearly better than Elden Ring, so
Elden Ring.
Yeah, right, yeah.
At number 3, Marvel's Midnight Suns at number 4, Kirby and the Forgotten Land at 5, Nobody Saves the World at 6, NBA 2K3 at 7, Mountain Blade that 2 Banner so Lord. Yes. That's going on my wish list. Mountain Blade 2 Banner Lord at 8, Power Wash Simulator at 9, and Atari 50th Anniversary Collection at 10. I think this is a list of very good games. it is a weird list, although I have seen other people with Vampire Survivors as their number one. I've seen a lot of people with Elden Ring as the number one. I think Tony's right. Marvel Midnight Suns just released way too late in the year. Like,
yeah,
at least after people did their list.
Yeah, they had already done their list. They'd already done their voting. So, like, but I think when that game came out, they were announcing Game of the Years for some of those publications.
They were. So. They were.
It's why I've always appreciated the fact that we do always after.
Well, we didn't used to.
That was a change Earl brought on, and I think it's a good change. Like that.
I agree with it a lot. I think what's the rush?
Right.
I get it for like these big publications. That's December 1st. We gotta have our. Like, it's like first off, you're not even close to the end of the year.
You don't have to because. Yeah. I mean, say that.
That's when people care about it more. But like,
is it though? What is the biggest award for movies?
Yeah, right. Right.
It's in February, right?
Yeah, like, March this year, I think.
I guess like if the industry just decided as a whole, like, hey, we want to give everyone on our teams to have time to play all these games, and then like, you know, the Game of the Year awards, like if most publications did them at the end of January, let's say. Then I guess that would become the stat editor and people would expect it then, right? But yeah, just like for whatever reason, I don't know.
If we had done this how we used to do it, Vampire Survivors wouldn't even have made any of our lists.
It would have been on mine because I hadn't played it. There's no way.
I think that and Midnight Sun would have missed it because Midnight Sun, I think,
right?
Because you got that for Christmas, right? Or after?
No, I got it at launch, but okay. I hadn't, like, I didn't really play a whole lot of it in the first, like, couple weeks.
I was going to say, more than anything, not even that. It's, like, because, I mean, personally, the holiday seasons in general are just a lot of work. But it's that week between Christmas and New Year's, there's a lot of downtime, and that's a good time
to get
up on. Yeah. Where, like, if you do it beforehand, it's like, okay, you got to figure out, one, you got to play these games. You got Thanksgiving, you got Christmas. And it's like, okay, I got to find time to play and talk about these games. Where it's like, I had, like I said, Gotham Knights got on because we had that additional week in between where we've recorded that, we got to play some of it.
That Mario and Rabbids wouldn't have made mine because I got it for Christmas. You know what I mean? Like, I just, because, you know, we're doing this for fun in a lot of ways, like, we get to decide when we do it. And I don't see what's wrong with giving everyone time to catch up on what they're playing. Like,
yeah. I'm
glad. We're month late. Oh no, you know.
Whatever. Guess what? We got to play some good games that maybe we would not have gotten, and now they're on our list. So, Speaking of good games, I'm going to go explore the Ishimura in Dead Space.
Oh, boy.
We'll talk about that next week, along with maybe some more Marvel Midnight Suns.
Hi-Fi Rush.
Hi-Fi Rush, GoldenEye.
Age of Empires 2?
Downloaded GoldenEye. I just turned off my Switch. I'm going to download both versions of GoldenEye. They're both free.
Yes, there you go.
And whatever the hell that Ink Illuminati game is.
Monster Hunter, maybe.
And Monster Hunter. Jeff can talk about Monster Hunter, right?
We can talk about Persona.
Persona? Persona 5, right? You played 5.
Yeah. Has anyone else played that?
No.
No.
Has anyone else played Persona?
I have played Persona and Persona 2.
Wow, okay. All right.
Like 20 years ago.
We'll talk about it then. All right.
We will. They're just like Xenoblade, like Earl said with Xenoblade, like they are just such a commitment to get into that it's like it steers me away from them.
I don't play, like, I've heard they're good games, and that's great. And I don't have time to play that.
We'll talk about it, but it is really like it's really good. But man, you gotta like really sit through a lot of shit that for me is not why I play games. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, we have a lot of games to talk about.
Yeah, I have some stuff to say about Persona 5. But
all right, we will hold that for next week. Thank you all for listening. Go play Vampire Survivors, our game of the year. Go play Elden Ring, of the year.
I'm waiting for you to summon me.
Go play Turtles, because that game's a lot of fun too. Get some friends, play that with friends.
Get some friends.
Don't summon me for that one.
I don't know. I don't think Marvel's Midnight Suns has anything any multiplayer. But
there's no multiplayer now. There's DLC now, though.
Okay. All right. Well, we will be back next week with a ton of games to talk about. We have not talked about games in a while. Jeff, say goodnight.
Congrats to Elden Ring, game of the year.
Elden Ring.
Fuck Elden Ring. Fuck Elden Ring.